Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 21 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host, Matt Kupferle, and we are really excited to have a special guest on tonight. But as always, I am joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Matthew Davis. Matthew, how's it going on the West Coast, buddy?
It's going well. This is episode 22, just to keep us on track here. Got him!
Got him!
But we do have a special guest, and that special guest is Alex Fast from Pitcher List. What's going on, Alex?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Matt, where are you on the West Coast? Like, are you in, like, Blade Runner land right now? Are you safe?
We are safe. It is kind of scary, though, because the wife and I purchased some property, about 4 acres, and it is dry out here. And we did have some fire scares about a month ago, and we were kind of close to the evacuation area, but managed to stay safe. And the air quality is really bad around us, and it's like orange outside, which is kind of eerie, but it's giving a fall feel to it, so maybe I'll make some soup and watch a scary movie tonight. So,
we're safe, so
that's good.
This is exactly what your listeners wanted, too, me to just jump in and bring the mood down. You know what I mean? Just
How's the apocalypse going, Alex?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. A podcast on fall soup recipes would be a hit, in my opinion.
My mom, who's our number one downloader and listener, would be so thrilled about this right now at this point.
I will take any and all pumpkin soup recipes. I'm a big fan of pumpkin soup.
Yes.
Well, in all seriousness, Alex, thanks a lot for joining. We've been lucky to get graced with a lot of really good guests, and Alex continues that lineage of awesome guests. For those that don't know Alex, he does outstanding work. Probably a lot of people know him from Pitcher List, but Alex does some absolutely insane work over with Major League Baseball. I can't thank him enough for all the times he's taken to answer my dumbass questions on things with queries and how things work. But there's some serious cool work over at baseball.savant that you need to check out that Alex is heavily involved with. I think Alex also is known for winning the FSWA Article of the Year around the CSW metric. Alex, I know it because I used it for a lot of my draft prep because I thought it was just a really cool metric and I'm a numbers nerd. But tell us about CSW and how did you come up with that?
Yeah, so the original idea was all Nick Pollock, the founder, CEO of Pitcher List. You know, he was just kind of talking one day and he said, you know, I think, you know, we should be paying attention to called strikes. And he came up with CSW and I said, all right, well, you know, he kind of comes up with the ideas, and then I'm the one who's up until, like, 4 a.m., like, researching the heck out of them because I can't go to sleep until it's, like, done.
Right.
So wrote this full piece about CSW where we realized that, oh, it's not just some crazy idea in Nick's brain. It actually correlates really well to ERA indicators, noticeably Sierra or skill interactive ERA, which is something that's obviously really important in your analysis. What I kind of like about it is the formula is really simple, right? Called strikes plus whiffs over total pitches. You want to see around 29% or 30% in the start, and after about 5 or 6 starts, it can become a little bit predictive, right? You want to keep track over the course of a season how a pitcher is doing with CSW. The one thing I really always want to stress about it, none of us at Pitcher List are like, here it is, the stat that you need to win your league. Like, we're just not like that at all. You know what I mean? Like, CSW should be another metric that's inside of your toolbox. And the way that I kind of view it is like providing nuance and context to a box score. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the perfect examples is like in the beginning of the year, Asher Wojciechowski had this really poor start against the Yankees where he gave up like 4 or 5 earned runs or something, but he had a really high CSW. And if you start to dig in a little bit more, it was essentially 1 or 2 pitches that he got burned on. And because CSW over 5 or 6 starts is a little more consistent, you can see, okay, he got burned by a pitch. Maybe he gave up a 3-run home run, and as a result, he lost the quality start or something. But overall, his CSW was really good, so therefore, he should be someone that we're paying attention to. Just like every other metric, there's context involved. Like a guy like Brady Singer has a really good CSW and has had a really good CSW over the course of the year, but he's always getting really difficult teams. He's just kind of a 2-pitch pitcher. So as with every other stat, context is involved, but at the end of the day, we think CSW is a nice stat that you can look at to get a good glimpse as to how a pitcher's performing.
Well, I can tell you, Alex, as a former college pitcher that didn't get a whole lot of called strikes or swinging strikes, they usually just ended up as rockets where I turned my neck the other way. it's a pretty interesting metric, and I think what it does, to your point, is it gives you another kind of card out of the playing card deck that you can use to uncover some different things. So I thought it was a great metric. I think it's really interesting. And I think it helps build into, as we talk about, there's a lot of listener questions that we got. Because who doesn't enjoy the greatness that is Alex Fast and the pitchless team? But before we get into all of that, are you a big fantasy baseball guy? Do you play home leagues with high school buddies, college buddies, anything like that? And if so, what kind of leagues do you play in?
I do. I do play in – I try and get as many leagues as possible in terms of type and variety. I have a home league. I didn't really start until after college, to be honest. I didn't really start until, like, 2012 playing fantasy. But I have a league that I'm the commissioner of, which is, as I'm sure you guys are aware, being a commissioner is a – awful. Unforgiving.
Awful.
Yeah, it's awful. It's the worst.
Absolute worst.
It's the nut low.
Everybody thinks you want the job. They piss on you, and you don't want anything to do with it. You're just trying to keep everything afloat. Nobody appreciates it. It's fucking terrible.
It's so terrible, and no one's ever happy. No one is ever happy. So
it's editing podcasts is not as bad, but commissioner of fantasy sports is way fucking worse.
It's just the absolute worst. And you just get to realize, you get to see levels of your friends that you just never want to see again. Like, don't text me at like 3 a.m. about a 0.5 point change. Like, I don't care. Like, ESPN will deal with it. Give it 24 hours and it'll be fine. Like, it's insane. So I'm in that league. And then, I was honored to be in Labor this year with Nick, which was like crazy. I was like co-hosting that with him, which was really nuts. So I try and mix it around. I think I'm in like six every year. I'm like, I'm going to cut down. This is like kind of funny. And I, Dave Sherman, who's a colleague of mine at PitcherList, who's great, talked about this a little while ago. I'm not really addicted to fantasy. Like, obviously I'm a competitive person. It's fun to win. I enjoy winning. The reason I do this is because the sport and the analysis is all I ever want. You know what I mean? Like, so obviously I want to provide good information to people at all times. That makes me excited. But when it comes to me, I'm not like, I'm never going to be the person who's like, I've won 18 fantasy leagues and I'm going to help you. You know, that's just not me, you know?
You should become that guy though. That would be kind of fun to see you change personalities at that point. No, I get it. It's fun to get some context, and obviously you've got some restrictions being, working for Major League Baseball that we would love to see you, Alex, out at, NFBC. Matthew and I have been commiserating how we were hoping to meet up this year in March in Las Vegas, and we didn't get to with COVID-19, and, hopefully things turn a corner and we can be out there together. But it's certainly a fun time to do things like, First Pitch Arizona or Las Vegas and things like that. But we totally get it. All the leagues are fun. We cater to all audiences.
I want to be that guy that wins all those leagues, though. But in order for me do that, I need people like Alex Fast that create metrics like he does. Along with our buddy Alex Chamberlain, he's not the greatest fantasy baseball player either.
No.
Hi, Alex. But he's an absolute beast when it comes to metrics and putting things together. He has a phenomenal pitch leaderboard and all that cool stuff. So people that want to succeed, like myself, need people like Alex and Alex to succeed. So,
and I obviously get along with Alex, and I have a path here. And one path is like I could just dunk on him for free because that makes me laugh. But then he's so much better at tossing insults. So I'm gonna humor and flatter him, which he's gonna hate, and be like, Alex is truly one of the smartest minds in the game. He constantly impresses me with how educated and the way he thinks. He's just such a incredibly smart dude. That leaderboard is so essential to analysis. So now that he's thoroughly embarrassed, I'm happy to be that for you. That's all I want to be. I want to be the dude who wins you a bunch of money. That's
absolutely.
Hey, we can cut you in anytime, Alex. It's fine.
That's fine with me. I got a shitload of loans, so go ahead.
So, hey, we want to talk to you about, you know, originally I wanted to talk to you about kind of other metrics. And I think you did a really good job in your top 100. So I'm kind of skipping around here of some pre-show notes that I sent you. But I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, we obviously believe in CSW. And honestly, reading through the methodology, I think that's what, you know, as I've talked to Matthew and Matthew has given me – he's been a better friend and co-host than anything else. He's coached me through, like, here's how you think about things. And that's how my mind work, Alex, is how did you develop or how do you think about that? What made you make your different things? So tell me a little bit about, before we dive into your top 100, what else do you look at that changes your perception? So not only CSW, but is it Sierra? Is it FIP? Is it hard hit? You know, all those numbers that we now have, which is awesome, but how do you aggregate so many numbers when you have to build a top 100 kind of set?
Yeah, it's a really fantastic question. I mean, it's the same thing with CSW where it's about context and nuance, right? The thing I always say, and it's kind of corny, is like a baseball player is kind of like a large puzzle and you want to put together all the different pieces. And yeah, there's like corner pieces, which are really, really great. And the corner pieces to me are like Sierra, FIP, CSW, you know, K percentage. Those are our corner pieces. But there's also, you know, the middle piece is just as relevant. You know what I mean? It's important to provide that that weight to the other pieces as well. So usually what I do is I'll start with those kind of ERA indicators to get a better sense of where there could theoretically be some sort of regression here or there. And then really what I like to do that I think the industry is kind of heading in this direction, which I think is really exciting, is go on a pitch by pitch basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Find out why the Sierra is the way it is. Find out why the FIP is the way it is. When we talk about pitchers that change year over year, we're always talking about a particular pitch that they added or they subtracted or that they figured out or that fell by the wayside. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So why shouldn't our analysis be focused around that? You know what I mean? Why shouldn't the analysis be around, hey, well, he's already got a really good fastball, so we don't need to worry about that. What's the secondary pitch?
Yeah.
Is there a third pitch? What happens if he gets a third pitch?
Yeah.
And then from there, if you start from that place and build from there, I think that's a really helpful way to do it.
Along with how they mix those up too.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys get like Dylan Bundy. You wrote, I think was it you that wrote the piece? I think on, you know, starting with the curveball a little bit earlier, getting ahead in the count and, you know, mixing things up. That's always, you know, it's a helpful part of that equation as well.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great point because it fits right back into that narrative of like when a pitcher makes a change or when a pitcher gets better or worse, sometimes it's a new pitch or sometimes, like you said, it's a total utilization change. And all of a sudden, like you said, Dylan Bundy starts throwing the curveball at 0-0 counts and he has more success. So once again, more evidence for go to the pitch level, see what's happening there, and then build from that.
Alex, I just hold that thought because I want to talk to you about Matthew Boyd because I have a theory on what's going on with Matthew Boyd. But so I want to talk to you about let's dive into your top 100 because we had a lot of questions about, again, take the rankings aside. Alex, I think people loved it. You know, the fact that you put yourself out there, that's one of the hardest things you can do in fantasy in any sport. Matthew put his projections out there and honestly – he sent them to me to look at them before they went live. I can only imagine the amount of work that he put in that, you know, we had our Ariel Cohen come on last week. I mean, just the amount of time that puts into that. You clearly researched and nuanced a ton of this stuff. So I'm going to ask you, before you get even into all the nuts and bolts, if you were going to take away, you know, just what you did in general, not, you know – What overall, as you go through the whole process, when you talk about success and challenge, it doesn't even need to be a name. What do you think, you know, is going to make you improve moving forward? And what do you think did you struggle or was a blind spot for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, in this industry, it has to be like in terms of improving moving forward when it comes to overall rankings. It has to be about hubris, right? It has to be about like, knowing when you're wrong, admitting when you're wrong, and moving forward. I remember when I was like 6 or 7 years old, my brother is 10 and a half years older than me. And he said something to me, you know, probably after like beating the crap out of me, when he was like, no one's ever going to like you if you can't admit you're wrong. And I was like, that like stuck with me ever, like forever. You know what I mean? I'm 32 now and it still sticks with me. And I just don't like, that has to be a fundamental part of your analysis. And it's totally wrong. It's totally okay to be wrong. Like, especially in a sport where success is hitting, you know, 260, 270. You know what I mean? It's okay to be wrong about those things. And I think this year, you know, putting yourself out there is really important. And it was an art. I mean, Matt can probably speak to it as well. It is an arduous, painstaking, awful process. Not even just putting yourself out there, but then being able to be like, okay, I need to back up every single one of these rankings and have a logical reason as to why it is the way that it is. And then as a result of being able to put yourself out there, you can learn where you went wrong. One of my favorite quotes of all time is from my favorite playwright and author. His name is Samuel Beckett. He says, try again, fail better. Right? And I just totally buy into that. And next year when I make my rankings again, I'll fail a little bit better. There are certain things that I learned this year about ceilings, about floors, about pitch utilizations, about analysis that will help me moving forward. So, yeah. But I wouldn't have been able to learn that if I didn't put my neck out there.
100% agree. And you have to get things wrong in order to correct those in the future. You have to, you know, it's all a learning curve, and you'll continuously learn. The greatest people out there, the best people out there, they're still learning right now as we speak. So
100%.
And I'm not even in the class of Matthew from a fantasy player, but I think the thing that he talked to me a lot about was, what did you, when you felt like you struggled in a fantasy league, what did you do right, but what did you do wrong? And that's what we, you know, we talk about transparently on the podcast is, here's where I feel like I came up short, you know, in a past league or whatever. And you start to develop those blind spots, Alex, to your point of like, okay, well, how do I get better at those? Right. You know, what is there to learn from? How can I, who does this better than me? And don't be so stuck on yourself that you can't think that you know everything, but I could probably be better. Here's how I can better. So I think everybody appreciates how you went through those. So now we're going to tell you all the things you did wrong. No.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Gotcha, bitch.
Is my wife on the podcast?
Yeah. No, so here's what – there's a number of things that I folded in for show notes of – some are questions, some are just outlines. First thing I want to ask you, though, is there's been a lot of talk about the Lance Lynns, the heavy inning guys for fantasy. When you did your rankings, do those guys mentally for you – you know, we're in this age, right? And maybe you do or don't factor in 2020, but – we're in this age where there's a lot of pitchers that get to five. Maybe they don't even get to five. I'm a Brandon Woodruff owner in a lot of leagues where it is so frustrating because he is absolutely dominant the first time through the order. And then he starts to really struggle. And then the train goes off the freaking rails on the third time. And he doesn't even get to five innings. So how do you, when you do your projections, Alex, and Matthew, to you too, when you get to a point, how do you value a DeGrom or a Lance Lynn or those guys that work super deep into games? How do you give them a bump when you do your numbers?
Well, I've been blabbing a bunch. So Matthew, why don't you go ahead and take this one first?
Yeah. So you have to evaluate those pitchers and the volume. It does come in attack. So when I was doing my projections for this weird, unique season, going over 2 month projections, I kind of went over the schedule and looked at the number ones, and I looked into how many times they could skip the fifth starter in the rotation. So I actually projected, I know some people had their starting pitchers being projected for 11 starts, whereas I had somebody like Lance Lynn, knowing his tendencies, going for 13 starts. So once I had their projection done, I kind of found the percentiles or the aggregate to that projection and then bumped it up another start or two. And so I did that with the top guys. And then in regards to some, like the team, like with the Dodgers, when you're talking about what do you do with their innings projections and how do you manage some of these guys, it's extremely difficult when you want to talk about guys like May, Urias, Stripling, Gonsolin, when Stripling was there with the Dodgers, because if they're on, like, it was weird because the first start of the season for Ross Stripling, he, you know, he might still have, I think, the most innings pitched for the team. He went in, like, in the seventh inning, and then since then, you'd see him get pulled in the third inning, and you've seen that with May and Urias, and even with Buehler last night, he had 32 pitches in the third inning, and they simply just yanked him. So it's really difficult to kind of narrow that down. when you do those guys. So when you do that, you kind of do different percentile projections. And so I might limit their ceiling in regards to that. So when I'm looking at somebody like Trevor Bauer and I go, okay, well, he's going to go this many innings, but you know, knowing his tendencies, I'm going to give his innings bump like a 75-80th percentile projection because I'm pretty confident in what he can do and what the manager is going to allow him to do. Whereas somebody with Mayer, Stripling, and Gonsolin, you're probably just going to go with like a 50th percentile and be, you know, you're going to have to simmer your expectations and know that the ceiling's just not there. If you haven't seen it, then you can't project it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with everything that you just said. I mean, I think you bring up a really valid point that I definitely take into account when I'm doing my analysis, which is there are certain organizational trends that are truths. And sometimes a team can go against them, but you want to be pleasantly surprised. You know what I mean? You want to think, hey, you know, Nick calls it getting counseling, right? Guys like Brendan Woodruff getting removed early because they're always going to go to their bullpen. And it's going to happen to virtually every single pitcher on the Brewers. And yeah, you could draft Brendan Woodruff and maybe he gets to the third time through the order, and then hey, you're pleasantly surprised, but you should pay attention to those organizational trends. Another team that does that is the Tampa Bay Rays, right? They're obviously not going to do that for a guy. Actually, I don't want to say obviously because they did it with Snell and they did it with Morton this year, although those are extenuating circumstances and we won't see that moving forward. But they're frequently going to do that with a guy like a Yanni Chirinos and a Ryan Yarbrough, not Chirinos, obviously, with the injury, but you kind of get what I'm saying, right? They're going to be a little bit, it's going to be easier for them to pull the trigger, especially when they have a dominant bullpen. So I think those organizational trends really, really are important. For me, I really got to use those innings pitched as, you know, tiebreakers, right? At the end of the day, you know, when we were ranking at the beginning of the season, Bieber versus Morton, when things were a little bit closer and we didn't know that Bieber was going to repeat as well as he has, if actually get better, you know, there was just as much of an upside for Morton. And we saw it at the end of the 2019 year, but I don't think anyone would have said coming into 2020 that Morton, even if fully healthy, was going to get more innings than Shane Bieber was. It just wasn't going to happen. So I think it makes, you know, those kind of tiebreakers when guys who potentially have ERAs that project the same and K rates that project the same, it's a really easy way to be like, all right, at the end of the day, who's likely going to get more innings here? What's their injury history? What team are they on? And then you can kind of rank them accordingly.
Yeah, and the problem with the draft market, we saw people draft Julio Urias and Jesus Luzardo, and it's nice to see him get going as a starter, but we saw people kind of want to extrapolate and go, well, they're going to get 11 to 12 starts, and everybody's going to get 5 to 6 innings, so let's just multiply it and get 72 innings pitched. He's as equal as Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't the case, man. And you know, I think that was a fault to some people just thinking because it's a shorter season, everyone's going to equally kind of go the same distance. And, you know, it's baseball and organizations are different. And you need to know those tendencies because things don't really change.
Well, there's also like, you know, I can't stress enough how important it is to kind of make your own ADP and kind of sit with that ADP or create an aggregate of other ADPs that you trust to use that going into your drafts. Because one guy says, oh man, Jesus Luzardo, I'm actually going to get him. I'm not that worried about the innings pitched. And then another guy says, oh, he's actually going early. I might need to get Luzardo a little bit earlier. And then another guy looks at the ADP that's rising and says, wow, I actually have to get Luzardo a lot earlier than I wanted to. I'm going to do that because I really trust Luzardo. And no one realizes what's happening behind the scenes. You know what I mean? People just see his ADP climb up and they're like, oh, I guess I have to reach a little bit earlier to get Luzardo. Maybe I shouldn't be as worried about his innings, you know?
Yep, it's crazy. People can see an ADP rise too, and then they think, "Oh, he's going to be so good." He's now, and like you almost convince yourself mentally when you see someone get helium, or you know, people start to talk about them, or some data comes out, or an article gets written, and podcasts are, you know, verbally yapping about somebody, and then the ADP rises, and there hasn't been a ball hit or a pitch thrown, and it's like everyone's just so convinced, like the player has already, you know, progressed to be so much better because they're rising in ADP, and it's just usually not the case. It's you know, sometimes or most of the times the opposite, and it ends up hurting you and they provide a negative ROI. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's a tough game to play. Fantasy baseball isn't easy. That's for
sure. A tough game for sure. And there's a really, really, really good book that I love called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And it's a book purely about psychology, and it's the best fantasy baseball book you could ever purchase because it's all about like kind of the mindset of the market, and it pertains so much, not just to fantasy baseball, but baseball analysis in general, how it comes to recency bias and cognitive dissonance. And like, it is truly one of the most helpful fantasy baseball books, and I cannot recommend it enough.
I might have to read that.
Check that out. Yeah, for sure. So, Alex, we're going to put you on the spot a little bit. I've talked about this kind of, you know, on the framework. But so when you think about, and I don't know if you've even gotten there, and we've talked with some experts that actually start doing some fantasy drafts, believe it or not, for 2021 in about 2 weeks. How have you have you started thinking about 2020 and will it affect 2021? Have you even given that a thought yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, every time it comes up and bubbles up, I think this even happened with Nick and I in the podcast that we recorded last night, where it's like you start to talk about it and then you just kind of have to cut yourself off because you're going to lose your mind. Not only because the world is on fire and who knows if we will even see 2021,
sure,
but because it's just like there are so many different factors to take into account. And what was exciting about the 2020 season was like it was going to be kind of a fun, chaotic year in terms of baseball, where
right,
projections weren't going to matter. And the Giants and Orioles are in top 10 in WRC plus. And, you know, like that's kind of fun. I don't think people realize that that's going to be the same thing in 2021, because the fantasy net that we had, which is large sample sizes, is being pulled away from us. With
right,
that said, does that mean I should, you know, throw it all away altogether? I really do not think so. There are legitimate changes that, I'm going to speak from a pitching perspective, that pitchers have made that you cannot throw out. John Means is not going to lose his velocity that he found all of a sudden in 2020. He's not going to lose that in 2021. That's a legitimate change that
sure,
he's done that we need to pay attention to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There have been pitchers that have changed their arsenals. Tanaka's a really good example. All of a sudden, you know, the conversation that we were having at the beginning of this year about Tanaka was, you know, is he going to find that splitter? If he finds that splitter, he'll have success. And he said, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to drop my fastball usage. I'm going to increase my slider usage. The slider's a top 10 pitch in swinging strike rate this year. And all of a sudden, that's a change that I
yeah,
can take into next year. So, listen, there are things that Patrick Corbin, I'm not paying attention to anything he did this year. He's a guy that it's like, you know what? I just don't think he had a full offseason. Mike Clevinger, he's another person. I just don't know if I'm going to pay that much attention. I think he might have
okay,
been rushed back from injury. So there's a little give and take, but I think it's a little bit much to throw all of it out.
So
agree. Yeah. Agree. Walker Buehler, another example, throw it out. Dylan Bundy, you need to bump him up, you know? So
would you guys both say that it's maybe, you, I mean, not that maybe a whole lot of people have time to do this, but is it maybe prescriptive to do it player by player instead of a blanket approach? Is that a
yes,
fair comment?
100%. 100%.
You got to put each player underneath the microscope, each and every one.
Yeah, 100%. You have to. You have to. And you know what? A lot of guys are going to be wrong next year, and that's totally fine. It's going to be a little bit like the Wild West. And all
yeah,
we can do is look at the numbers and make an estimate. And some people are going to say, you know what? I'm not really relying on this. And they're going to go with their
sure,
gut, and that's fine. But yeah, all we can do, I agree, 100%. Player by player, go from there.
Well, I think
good
Matthew
luck
and I
out
both.
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
he's absolutely beasting again tonight, though.
Yeah. Well, he found out that the MLB had tweeted a graphic about the Cy Young winner, and he wasn't included, so he knows he has to.
Oh, God.
That's going to get more and more fun, too, because he's definitely worthy.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So I think what Matthew and I write a lot about, you know, fantasy season long and DFS, Alex, is just how we figure that out. And one thing I did want to ask you, and I teased you pre-show about it, but the conundrum that is known as Matthew Boyd. I am a Matthew Boyd owner. I was a Matthew Boyd owner last year. I have my own theory about Matthew Boyd, and he was much better until he just, I mean, absolutely got shellacked today in a day game by the Brewers. How do we reconcile what we see peripherally on all of the metrics that he clearly possesses elite talent on how we get there. But I mean, he, from about June 1st of last year, he's been basically dead weight from a fantasy perspective. How do we wrap our minds around that?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And, you know, he is someone that obviously I was really excited about coming into the beginning of the year because I'd seen him in spring training. And I do believe that had he continued the path that he was on during spring training this year might have been a little bit different. With that said, there's no excuse. I recommended him. I was totally wrong. He's looked like absolute garbage, especially at the beginning of the year. It's funny that we're having this conversation now because this, once again, was something I was talking about recently with Nick. I personally believe there's no bigger fantasy sport that has a what have you done for me lately. And we establish opinions about a particular pitcher based off what they have done in their first three or four starts, right? The beginning of the season is crucial for how our minds are thinking about a particular player. And the narrative changed with Matthew Boyd in these past four starts before today, right? 3.38 ERA against the Twins twice, the White Sox, and the Indians was really impressive. 33%, 34% CSW. This was really exciting stuff. But as you just said, there's a volatility and a floor there that I don't think I particularly took into account because individually it's there. Last year we knew that the slider was one of the best sliders in baseball, and it really was. We knew that he was able to command that fastball the way that he needed to, but he was getting in trouble because he was rearing back too much to try and hit 93, 94 because he was frustrated about throwing 92, and it would get hit really hard. All of a sudden this offseason, he introduces the third pitch. He says, hey, not only do I have a changeup that's going to make DJ LeMahieu look silly in spring training, I've also got a show me curveball that's really exciting too. And all of a sudden, hey, if I put all those together, what's going to happen? What I didn't realize, and I think what we saw in the first three starts from Matthew Boyd, when that slider went away, which is a part of the reason it happened, everything crumbled with it. And he didn't want to go to anything else. The fastball didn't matter. The other secondary stuff didn't matter. The sinker didn't matter. The slider wasn't there, and he was getting shellacked. All of a sudden, he said, after about three or four starts of terrible performances, you know what? I'm just going to start throwing my changeup a lot more. And he did, and that's why he had success. Today is a little bit interesting because he did not have that fastball command at all. He left it over the heart of the plate a lot, and it got absolutely punished, even when he did hit 93, 94 with the pitch. So, listen, I completely understand any person who's like, you know what? I am out on Matthew Boyd. I never want to deal with this volatility again. He's always going to be a home run guy. And if he has success on another team, good for him. Me, as an analyst, it's my job to never completely rule anyone out.
Yeah.
He does have the pieces to put it all together. Yeah. He hasn't done it quite yet. Hopefully he falls far enough in drafts last year that you can get him at absolutely no cost. But I do still think there is evidence that there is enough there for him to be a fantasy viable asset at some point moving forward.
Alex, do you think he struggles, and this is where I kind of have watched, because I've watched Matthew Boyd probably too close to really understand, but his pitch sequencing seems honestly a little bit bizarre, and I played a level of baseball that's nowhere near what Matthew Boyd deals with, but the thing that blows my mind is he'll miss with a changeup or a slider just off the plate. Where a guy is pot committed and he did not swing. And I will tell you, playing a very low level of college baseball, my college pitching coach was really good. He pitched at Wichita State. But he would always make us double up on pitches like that. So if you miss with a changeup, you throw it again. It almost feels like when I watch him a lot, it's he misses with a slider and he just missed. And he thinks like, well, I can't throw that again. So then he throws a fastball down the middle or something that he misses with. Do you think it's a sequencing thing? Do you think it's a lack of command and control? If you were going to try to peg it, is it just a lack of inexperience? Is there any one thing, or are you just ultimately kind of baffled like a lot of people are with Matthew Boyd?
No, I mean, I can definitely understand the point that you're trying to make. I mean, Nick and I had the fortune and the pleasure to meet him after a start, right? And he was truly like one of the kindest people that I've ever met.
Yeah,
He might be a little bit of an overthinker. That could definitely be the case where he is not executing the way that he would want to execute. And to be honest, I would also then put some credence then on what his relationship is with a catcher, right? Because it's also a catcher's job to say, hey, you know what? Stick with this. This is where you're going to have success. And I don't know if a guy like Grayson Griner is going to be able to do that for him.
Yeah.
With that said, I did see a lot of that exact sequencing issue today. I saw a particular Yelich at bat where he had a slider away that Yelich just, he whiffed at it completely. And then he went to it again and Yelich spit on it. And in my mind, it was like, dude, the slider's your best pitch. You already struck him out once, throw him again. Or if you really want to get cute, go high and tight with a fastball up and at the hands. Yelich is not catching up to anything right now. And he didn't. He threw a sinker and it was a ground out. And it's like, okay, he got the ground out. But I can definitely get behind it. I mean, there's always something, right? So I'm really reticent to say like, hey, he just needs to figure it out.
I get it. I saw, I don't know if you or Matthew, if you guys saw Trevor Bauer's last start, pitching ninja Rob Friedman posted, I think Bauer threw 12 or 13 curveballs in a row.
Yeah.
He was just like, screw you. You cannot hit this because it's so good. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of, honestly, it's kind of the fuck you attitude you have to have sometimes where it's like, this is my best pitch. You're not going to hit it. And I know you don't think it's coming, but I'm going to throw it anyway. And then at some point when you throw 8 in a row, it's like, okay, well, how many curveballs are you going to throw? But it just feels like Boyd has not figured that part out yet because his stuff is just nasty. You were tweeting some gifs today, or Nick was, of, I mean, he's embarrassing people with that slider, to your point.
Yeah, 100%. And to echo off what you said, I mean, there is a – it feels like it's happening quicker than I anticipated, but there is a changing tide when it comes to pitching. And a lot of the – you know, Kyle Bodie is really leading a lot of it. He tweeted a couple days ago about Lucas Giolito saying, you know, the year of the – or the time of the high changeup and high curveball is here. I was you know, having a conversation with a pitcher not too long ago where I said, well, have you ever thought about throwing a first pitch changeup more? And he said, not really. You know, we're kind of taught that that's just a batting practice fastball, you know, and I don't know if I really want to do that. And in my mind, I was like, nah, dog, like, you got to throw that out the water. Like, it's okay to do it. It's a different sport. And also, if you experience that, then maybe the hitter's thinking it too. There's no way he's going to throw me a first pitch changeup. That's a batting practice fastball. And I just think, considering how aggressive guys are on 0-0 counts because they're waiting for heat because they don't want to get to a secondary pitch.
They're afraid.
Turn the rules on their head, man. Just do whatever you got to do.
Yep. No, I totally get it. And I think that leads into, this feels like it's death by a thousand cuts, Alex, so I apologize in advance. But Dylan Bundy is the next one I want to talk about with you. So as an Orioles fan, you're an Orioles fan, right? Am I right there?
Yes, I can admit that publicly, yes.
No, it's okay. So Dylan Bundy was 78th on your list, but I think a lot of guys, including yourself, wrote, you know, where there could be upside with Dylan Bundy. And I think some people thought he would, you know, maybe take off after leaving Baltimore. But what's the narrative behind that? Is that just Baltimore fans being pessimistic? Is it there's a true step change to your earlier points that you've made? Is there a philosophical difference that people feel like they're limited if they're in the Baltimore organization? Or is he leaning more on that nasty slider that you just never knew about? Where do you take, you know, a Dylan Bundy type of pitcher? And are there others that you see in the same vein?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I mean, I think when it came to Dylan Bundy in this offseason, the first time I ranked him before the COVID, before all that stuff, I was like, yeah, there's some upside there. I'll put him in the low 80s. And then my evolution of thinking was, okay, there's more upside than I anticipated. I'm going to put him higher. But then I thought the ADP was putting him really high, so I wanted to temper it by putting him a little bit lower. And I think he ended up in the high 60s or maybe low 70s in the second time I did a ranking. And the logic I had when it came to Dylan Bundy was really, I was kind of at a two paths in the road. On one side, I could not think to believe that Mike Elias and Sig Meidel, these two brilliant minds from the Astros, could not have gone to Dylan Bundy and said, hey, your slider is clearly your best pitch. Throw it like Patrick Corbin. Throw it more. Throw it a lot more. and then, you know what I mean? And then we'll worry about your fastball later. We don't really need to worry about it.
I mean,
It's totally confusing. And I the other option was maybe just Dylan Bundy. Maybe he was a guy who didn't want to change. Maybe he was like, this is the pitcher that I am. This is the pitcher I got success with in the first place. And this is the pitcher I wanted to be. Those were the two paths. Now, he obviously went down the path where he just needed to utilize his pitch mix in a little bit of a different way. Yeah. And while it would be really easy for me to sit here and say, I cannot believe the Orioles. This is Jake Arrieta all over again. Mike Yastrzemski's having one of the best years ever. Kevin Gausman's killing it in San Francisco. What's going on with that organization? It's really easy for me to do that. I don't know what goes on behind those closed doors. You know what I mean? I know that those men are incredibly smart and they probably have ideas that I didn't even think of. So it's convenient for me to rip them a new one, and I'm not going to do it. Not that you're asking me to do so, but I have to give them some.
Sure.
I have to believe that there's some.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in terms of him as a pitcher, what's exciting about him is not only are the first pitch curveballs really exciting, not only is the increase in slider usage really exciting, it's how he's not only pitching backwards in terms of breaking first and fastballs later, he's also kind of pitching backwards in terms of how he's utilizing these pitches. He can set up his fastball low and then bring his curveball high just to completely change eye level and have success doing that. Do I think that Dylan Bundy is a sub, you know, two ERA pitcher for the rest of his career? Absolutely not. But he has learned how to capital P pitch with the arsenal that he has. And while that diminished velocity is always going to be scary, it's going to be scary to see him throwing 89, 90 mile an hour fastballs. There's enough in that full arsenal for me to believe that he can have some sustained success moving forward.
How many different pitching coaches do you know, Alex? How many different pitching coaches Bundy went through? Doug Brocali. Brocal is the current pitching coach. Is he new or has he been around for a while? Sometimes I think of quarterbacks in the NFL and they get dangled around with offensive coordinators, and sometimes the development gets slowed because of that, and there's no consistency and they're not able to work with each other. Do you know off the top of your head if there was different pitching coaches over his little tenure there, or was it just the same guy not figuring things out?
No, it was different guys. So there was Rick Adair for a really long time. I think he was there from like 2012, 2013. Then we had Dave Wallace for a little while. Then it was back to Rick Adair. Then it was Roger McDowell for a year. And then it was Doug Brocali, who I've actually heard I've heard fantastic things about. Like I think it might have been Dan Straley who was like, he's just absolutely fantastic. And to his credit, the results so far have been really good. Doug was there last year with Bundy. So I don't know. I don't know if it was him or what it was, because I have heard great things about him. But yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes that inconsistency can kind of hurt the development for some of those young guys.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know what they were telling him, but you know, some of those guys are the same guys who were telling, you know, Arrieta not to throw his best pitch. So who knows? And who knows what's organizational? You know what I mean? Who knows what's up at the top?
We used to think that the Pirates used to have pitching magic, and then they were like telling all of their pitchers not to throw certain things, and then every single one of them left, and every organization was like, nope, you need to use that more. And started raining all over the place.
Yes.
All right, Alex, we're going to dive into some questions from the listeners, because we had a lot of really good ones, and honestly, they were kind of all over the board from – you know, in-game situations to people that you see to fantasy advice. So we're just going to kind of run down the list before we let you go. So our buddy over at FTN, Josh Kalachi, said, I think one that you saw, bases loaded, full count, two outs, up by a run. Who are you picking for a pitcher to get that last strike?
As of right now, Devin Williams. I want Devin Williams with his
changeup. Shout out to St. Louis, Devin Williams. Shout out.
he has not allowed a hit yet in that changeup, and it has the highest swinging strike rate in baseball at 34.4%. That's over any pitch thrown over 100 times, and it's not even close to what second place is. That one pitch is arguably the best pitch in baseball right now. It is a magic pitch, and I don't want a starter because sometimes they're iffy in the first inning. Sometimes it takes some time to figure things out. I want a guy like Devin Williams. He's going to come, and he's going to throw his changeup, and you're going to be out of it.
All right. Awesome. I did not see you going there, but anytime we can, pimp out St. Louis, I totally, truly love that. So I didn't even set you up with that one knowing that was going to be the answer. So I really appreciate it.
Did he do something with St. Louis that I don't know about?
No, he's from my hometown. Actually
from your hometown. I was like, oh my God, did he get traded or something? I was
like, no.
Florissant, Missouri.
Yeah. Florissant. He played for my club team that I played for growing up too. So
wow, awesome.
Really
he
good.
He has a 53.8% strikeout rate.
It's insane.
Yeah. That change is filthy. I mean, it just looks like a fastball directly out of his hand and no one can pick it up. It's awesome. So
insane.
Amazing. All right. Question two. Garrett Cole. We all probably thought, Alex, there was some regression coming, but this doesn't look like maybe the same Garrett Cole, or was he, you know, performing over his head? What do you think about Gerrit Cole? And as you assess, you know, you and I talked about, you know, top arms for next year. What are you thinking on Cole?
Yeah, I'm personally not too worried. I mean, his curveball is getting hit a lot harder, right? His Wobakon is went from 391 on his curveball to 734 this year. There's a really cool leaderboard on Baseball Savant up called Swing Take, right? And what Swing Take does, it adds up the run value on a pitch-by-pitch basis. So, for example, for a pitcher, you want a negative run value. A pitcher throws a strike, and it's theoretically, I'm just making up a number, negative 0.25 runs, right? So you want that. You want as many negative things as possible. If they give up a walk, it's 0.25 runs. Positive, you don't want that, so you want negative. Now, what they do is they take a pitch-by-pitch basis, and they also break it down by zone. So they have four different zones: heart of the plate, shadow, which is inside, like right near the corners of the strike zone. Then there's chase, which is like looks like it's going to be a strike, then falls out. And then waste pitch, which you really don't want. So one of the things that they do is they say, hey, over the heart of the plate, who has the best pitch value? And who does that on fastballs? And last year, Gerrit Cole had a negative 29 run value on fastballs over the heart of the plate. That was second best behind Jack Flaherty. That just means that when Gerrit Cole threw a fastball over the heart of the plate, it didn't matter. He was absolutely dominant with it. That could be because of the spin rate, the active spin, the velocity, the, you know, pairing it with the curveball or the slider, whatever, it was dominant. This year, it went from negative 29, which was second best, to plus one, which is 234th on the leaderboard as of right now, okay? The CSW on that fastball went from 36.3 to 31.4, and the CSW on the fastball over the heart of the plate went from 48% last year, 48% called strikes and whiffs over the heart of the plate, down to 38.6. That's a very precipitous drop. He's not having the same success. It might be because of the lack of success he's having with some of those breaking pitches, although the slider is really good. This isn't anything that I'm thinking that this is the new normal for Gerrit Cole. I think that fastball can get back to what it was.
Okay, so the velocity, I have him in one of my main events, so I watch every single pitch he's throwing. The velocity's there. Mm-hmm. Do you think, and I don't know because I don't have the data in front of me and I didn't look it up, do you think the RPMs are down? And possibly that there's just a tiny, tiny little, you know, less in movement on some of that?
Because I am pathetic, I had looked up the RPMs, and they are not different. He had 2530 on the four seam last year, and he had 2504 this year. He's still using a substance, probably. So it isn't necessarily
I've seen it.
Yeah, it's there. There are so many guys using it. I really don't care. Like, Trevor Bauer's using it. Gerrit Cole's using it. It doesn't matter. But, yeah, sadly, it is the same. What I haven't taken a look at that I'm actually going to pull up right now is – actually, I did take a look at this, and I believe it is the same. Yeah, it is. He's a dude that had elite active spin as well, not just spin rate, but active spin, how much of the spin contributes to the movement of the pitch. You want as close to 100% as possible. Last year, he had 97.1% active spin on his four-seamer. This year, it's 99%. I don't think it is the pitch itself. It could just be location. It could just be sequencing. But otherwise, the underlying metrics are okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully he just crushes the rest of the way. And it was so weird, too. A little bit of bad luck, too. So his last start against the Orioles before the DJ Stewart home run, he was cruising. I mean, first few innings, he was just basically striking out everybody. He hadn't allowed a hit through like four or five. And then it was like a walk and then a single and then a, you know, opposite field DJ Stewart home run or whatever off of a pitch. And then it was like, wow, that just escalated. Oh, it was actually off of an error, too. So the runs weren't even earned, but.
Sure.
I don't know. It was just really, really, it happened so fast.
Yeah. I hear you.
Alex, I think that leads into next is we've seen, you know, perennial first rounders, Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, who could really fall out of the first round in NFBC drafts next year. If you were going to pick two to replace Verlander and Scherzer, who do you think could take their place in that top echelon, maybe push into the first round of a 12-team or a 15-teamer?
I think Bieber can do it. I think Bieber and I really wish I had the cojones to say Gallen, but I don't know if I could ever consider him really a first rounder. I do love him, and I'm very excited he's doing so well. But I think Darvish could be another guy where, you know, it just seems like it's clicking right now. And while I always freak out about Darvish because he is never, ever satisfied, and that always scares me, he just continuously shows, like, Eno Saris would talk about it for years, like, what happens when all of his pitches click? Like, he will win a Cy Young. And now here we are, and he could very well win a Cy Young.
Yeah.
So that leads us... Trevor Bauer and Zach Greinke, I was off of both of them because I was concerned in a short season if they wanted to, even after a successful start, you know, oh, I could get even better. Let's tinker. Let's fix something. Let's, you know, I thought, and I was wrong, I thought that they were too smart or wanted to be too smart for their own good. And it appears that at least for Bauer and Darvish and even Greinke, you know, they are smart enough to be doing what they're doing. So, you know, something I need to correct on my own end, too.
Who are your Cy Young Award winners, Alex?
You know, it's AL has to be Bieber. For NL, I think at this point you have to go DeGrom. Better K percentage. They have the same FIP, about DeGrom and Darvish, that is. DeGrom has the better Sierra. They actually have the same whip. So that's same whip and same FIP between DeGrom and Darvish, just to let people know how close it may be going down the stretch. Yeah. So it is close, and I think DeGrom could lose it, but it's DeGrom's to lose. I'd rather have a guy who has a better K percentage than a better walk percentage. So I give the edge to DeGrom a little bit there, but man, this is going to be a hell of a race coming down to the stretch. And then, hey, maybe even Bauer comes in. But DeGrom, I think, broke his own record in his last start for most whiffs in a start at like 31 or something. Like, he's just a man possessed.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, in my main, if I have a main event pick 1-1 next year, I'm going DeGrom.
I don't blame you. Yep. I don't blame you.
Uh-huh.
And who do you can make that? Oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say one thing because it reminded me of something that I think is really crucial, too. A lot of people don't realize that, like, people are going to have fewer innings this year, and as a result, it is going to be more difficult for them to ramp up to 180 next year. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Guys are getting peaked at 75, 76. One of the guys I will really not be too concerned about with that is Jacob DeGrom.
Nope. And, like, you know, that people need to realize that and try and put that in your back pocket now in regards to, like, Jesus Luzardo and whatever the news, if there's positive on, like, even an AJ Puck or a Julio Urias and some of those other guys. If you haven't seen 160 innings plus, you're not going to see it next year. Promise you that.
Yes. Yes. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. So I think you kind of teased this one out, but your leap to be an ace next year in the kind of top 12 starting pitchers. Is it Zach Gallen? Is there a second arm that you would include in that group?
Yeah, it is Gallen. I mean, he's just looked so absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's like, I know people want to, like, point to that most recent start against the Giants, but even the first five innings was just, like, absolutely dominant from him. And he also, like, I really don't put too much credence into this, but it is an important factor. He wants to dominate you. You know what I mean? He's not like a Scherzer where he's, like, screaming into his glove, but, like, all he's worried about is kicking your ass, and I love that. So I think he's a guy that could just continue to make the leap.
No, I love it. And then who are you the most worried about, Alex, for next year? Who, you know, take injuries out of the equation. Is there anybody that you're really seeing some major regression from that gives you pause?
Yeah, I mean, so at the very, very top, I'm probably going to be staying away from Verlander. Even before the injury, he said he's going to change his mechanics to not be so violent to prevent future injury. And that freaks me out because we're talking about a regression to some of the mechanics he might have had at the end of his tenure with the Tigers. And while that will not be terrible, I do not think he will deliver, you know, first round value for you as a result of that. If I go a little bit deeper, there is no wider gap between a FIP and an ERA than there is between Dylan Cease's right now. I'm really not just buying into any of the stuff that he's doing this year. I understand people are excited because of the low ERA, but the Ks are gone, and that's just not who Dylan Cease is. I'm also a little bit worried about Dinelson Lamet. I mean, at the end of the day, his two pitches are fantastic, but they're two pitches, and that's a little bit, you know, that leaves me a little bit nervous moving forward. And then a little bit deeper, also really don't know, like, don't let Antonio Senzatella be like Marquez from 3 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he's doing enough where I'm going to be like, oh, maybe Antonio Senzatella is a top 75 pitcher next year. I don't really see that happening.
Yeah. And Alex, as you look to your top 12, you and I are messaging about this. You know, I think the obvious are the obvious. But as you think about setting your top 100 for next year, but really, we love your top 12. Who do you see as guys that surge their way into that top grouping that most people maybe – are there a couple names that would be that people would be surprised by that you're peeking at?
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to be – I still think Castillo can be in the top 12. I still think Flaherty can be in the top 12. I think if I really wanted to be ballsy and not go with, like, the kind of whatever, I still think Clevinger has that upside.
Okay.
There is a lot of risk there. I said to myself at the beginning of the 2020 season, we're at a crossroads with Mike Clevinger. He either becomes the guy who gets injured all the time and could have been, or he becomes the dominant pitcher that he's supposed to be. And he went down the injury path, and that scares me. I don't think he had a really great offseason. I don't think, you know, he's obviously got some off-field issues that there's a little bit of a concern about. But, man, when he was performing in 2020 and we saw that 95, 96 mile an hour fastball that he was sitting at and painting the top of the zone, there's enough in that arsenal that if it clicks, it is fantasy ace material. So while I wouldn't put him in my top 12 as of right now, something tells me for 2021's top 100 list, he might be there.
Matthew, anybody for you that sticks out for 2021 that you think could jump into that list?
For the first, to jump in the first round, I think Lucas Giolito's getting close to earning that mention for my personally on my own end. And then somebody else not into the first round or anything, but I think that he's slowly making some improvements is Jose Berrios. I've always been a fan of his mechanics and balance, and it looks like his strikeouts are slowly starting to trend in the right direction, which we've always kind of hoped and wanted for. So Jose Berrios is kind of somebody that I like somebody like that and consistency. And then somebody that was going in the third round this year is Chris Paddock. I think with some of the struggles, but he's also been showing some improvements along the way as well. I think that he might not get the helium that he's going to deserve going into his third season. So I was drafting him in the main event in the third round. I'm happy going back there again in 2021, but if he slips and I'm noticing he's a fourth or fifth or whatever, you know, fourth or fifth round is what I'm assuming he'll fall to. I'm all over that. I want all of it next year.
Yeah, he was an interesting case that a lot of people were either all the way in on or all the way out on, and that's a tough one because he's looked really good in some spots. So it'll be fun to see how it wraps up. Alex, thanks a lot for joining us. What can we look forward to of your work over with Major League Baseball or Pitcher List that we can let the listeners know about?
I can't say, but there are some exciting things that I'm working on the pitching end of things as it pertains to movement that I'm hoping to debut in a couple of months.
At Pitcher List or at MLB or both?
I'll plead the fifth.
Okay.
Yep.
At somewhere on the interwebs.
It's somewhere on the interwebs. I'll say that.
Okay. Sponsored by Health. Appreciate that. Okay. Great. Matthew,
very cool.
We know you've got your hands full with a lot of primetime fantasy football stuff. We've got NFL kicking off tomorrow. You're knee deep in baseball stuff too. Anything you want to pimp out over the next couple days?
So if you want to play against me in fantasy football, you can. The NFFC is teaming up with FTN, and they sponsored putting me into a Beat Matty Wood NFFC RotoWire Online Championship. So
dope.
That's going to be happening tomorrow
free
morning
money,
at 10
free
a.m.
Money.
Yeah, I'm a fish, so come gobble me up and defeat me. And other than that, I'll have a new podcast coming out for football called the FTN Fabcast, and that's basically going to be twice a week just going over players to add and drop in fantasy football, along with budget allocations and all of that good stuff. Pretty much similar to what Matt and I currently do for fantasy baseball, but in regards to football. So that's what I'll be doing, and I'm just excited to see what happens these last few weeks of baseball, and I'm eager for football to begin, and I'm so excited to have fall weather here and the season turning and getting closer to the holidays. And I know things have been pretty dark and gloomy for the nation, but you know, some family time, some good soups and some cold weather and comfortable pajamas can hopefully put a smile on all of our faces. Yeah. So I'm looking
forward to that. I have a question for you before we wrap up then. I am a diehard Ravens fan. Will we finally win a playoff game with Lamar Jackson this year?
Yeah, they'll definitely at least win one. Yeah. They'll win at least one playoff. I don't think that they'll win the Super Bowl or anything like that. I don't have them going to the Super Bowl, but you'll have a fun ride for sure. Yeah.
I just can't get hurt again. The past 2 years have been so demoralizing.
Yeah, it's weird. So everyone wants to say, like, you know, you got to regress somewhere, and, you know, but it's weird because, like, usage and exposure to, like, Andrews and Brown, like, those things are going to tick up, and they're only getting smarter, and they're still developing. So those things are really scary. So I don't see how they can regress too much when they're still growing as a team and as a core, and they've gotten better on defense as well. So they're terrifying.
Thank you. All I wanted to hear. Thank you so much.
I'm a Jets fan. It's my one out of state team, and it's just fucking crippled me forever. Terrible.
Alex, we really appreciate you taking the time on a Wednesday evening to join us. It was very fun. The time was awesome, picking your brain and hearing about things. So thank you. I know the listeners will enjoy it. We will be joining you this weekend with our kind of normal cadence of our Fab podcast. Matthew's got his hands full, so we may try to squeak in a midweek podcast. Matthew, that's up to you.
Yeah, we might be able to do one next week on Wednesday is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Alex, thank you. We really appreciate it. It was awesome picking your brain. Thanks to everybody that listened. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.